still very much something new, I would say, in that part of the world where I'm currently based. Startups understand very much the benefits of a fractional CFO, but it's coming slowly but surely across SMEs as well, in terms of their good kind of service that can really benefit the business and the entrepreneurs.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy, CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Christoph Ganser from ClearEdge. Christoph is based out of Switzerland and has a passion for the changes that are happening when it comes to ESG reporting, specifically in Europe, and we're going to talk about how it impacts Switzerland as well. And in this podcast, we're going to give you a rundown of the impacts of these changes, what it's going to mean for European companies. Maybe we'll talk a bit about the competitiveness of European companies with these new requirements that are coming down the track, and we'll have a bit of fun along the way. So, Christoph, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe I could just open it up by asking you, tell us something about you that not many people know.
Hi, James. Very happy to be here with you today on the show. I'm actually a French person living in Switzerland for a couple of years, and think that not many people know is that I've actually spent most years of my life outside of France than actually in France now. When I'm doing the count, I'm probably at 60-40, so 60% of my time living abroad or not in France anymore, and 40% in France. So that's, time flies, but I'm still very happy every time I go back.
Yeah, I wonder, I always felt like I'm Irish. I spent a lot of time outside of Ireland, but there's a certain feeling when I go home to Ireland, which is, I don't think I'll ever get rid of. It's like a mix of nostalgia, and it's like a warm hug, I guess, going home. So, but now that you've been more than half your life outside, is that still true, or is that feeling gone away?
Yes, I agree. You never forget your roots and your very first memories as a kid. They stick around.
So ClearEdge has been in business for 15 years now. Maybe you can just give us a bit of the background as ClearEdge as a business and as a focus.
So yes, the company was actually founded 5 years ago. Yeah, it's a finance consulting company where we provide the fractional CFO services in Switzerland. I know it's not something new in the US and elsewhere in the world. I was also living for a couple of years in Australia, and that was quite common. It's still very much something new, I would say, in that part of the world where I'm currently based. Startups understand very much the benefits of a fractional CFO, but it's coming slowly but surely across SMEs as well, in terms of their good kind of service that can really benefit the business and the entrepreneurs. So yes, that's the reason why I made the move. In fact, I came across that kind of business model when I was abroad, living and working. And when I came back, I said, yes, I can see that there is potential here. So that's why I decided to start as a fractional CFO, actually.
Very good. And what sort of business does the business have itself? Is it a partnership, or is it how is it structured as a firm?
So the way I operate is within a network of similar companies that are doing the same here in Switzerland. And I'm not working alone. It's very much, I collaborate with a group called FS Partners, where we have a pool of experts with different, all former CFOs or former controllers, where we have different expertise and different backgrounds. So whenever there is a request for a specific project or a specific customer where maybe not the right person from a skill set standpoint, I can reach out and we can find in the pool somebody that would be actually the right kind of profile for the role, and vice versa. I can get also a request that would be where I could be a good candidate and a good person to work with some specific companies. So that's how we operate.
So I guess we'd be most familiar with this model with the big firms, the big four. It's like a management consulting style where you have different people responsible for different types of business, and then they pool together as necessary.
Yeah, the model is a bit more flexible in a way. So we can operate or have our own customer and missions. And sometimes we see some potential and opportunities of collaboration, typically around the topic of sustainability reporting. That's a topic we're currently working on together, because we see some growing needs and demands in the market. And it's always better to go not on your own, but with a couple of people you can trust and with whom you're happy to work with.
And so what binds you together in terms of values as a group, other than sounds like you work fairly independently when you need to, but what's the common thread between you all that as ClearEdge as a whole, you could identify as their values?
I think the values are very much the fact that we are very much convinced about the benefit of a fractional CFO or an interim CFO kind of roles and what we can bring to the business or to the economy in general. Those roles are not always easy to find. I've been obviously in the corporate world for quite some time. When you have to look for a new CFO in a key position, it's a tough job for HR to find the right person with the right skill set, somebody that would be a good fit with the company culture. So that's a challenge. So the fact that we as a group, having a pool of something like 60 or 70 people, with different background and different profiles, is usually available within short notice, which is also very, very important in that kind of position. I think we're all convinced about the added value that we can bring when any company has a burning need for a new CFO position, and not 6 months or 12 months to look for someone, but a need that are quite urgent. So I think we are we are all very convinced that what we bring in terms of service to the economy is very making sense. And as I said before, it's not so common maybe here in that part of the world in Europe as it is maybe in the US. So that's something which is also something we have in common. It's a bit more raising awareness among entrepreneurs about the benefits of a fractional CFO and interim CFO that not everyone would understand or realize, actually.
So personally, as a Frenchman living in Switzerland, I was quite surprised to hear that there's still quite somewhat of a divide within Switzerland. It's got the different parts there. Is that still something you contend with? Are there effectively two kind of economies going on, the French and German economy? Is that still a split day to day, or have we moved beyond that?
So Switzerland is a beautiful country. Many people will associate Switzerland to the mountains, the Alps, and the beautiful lakes, and that's true. What is quite unique about Switzerland, as you said, is the fact that you have different communities living and working in that relatively small country, in fact, with only 8 million inhabitants. And you have quite a strong divide between the German-speaking and the French-speaking part of the country. We also have a community of Italian-speaking people in the south part of Switzerland. That divide exists, yes, but what I've learned and I've observed and I quite admire, in fact, about the Swiss people is the fact that they've been able to, because of those differences, they are very skilled at finding compromise. Huh. And I think those days, I see that more as an asset, because you cannot always obtain everything you want, and you have to. And when you don't, when you give up on something, it doesn't mean that you lose, in fact. A compromise is usually a good way to move forward. It's a win-win in the end. And they are very good at that. And I must say that it's, as I said, in today's world, in my opinion, that's a strength, because nothing is always black and white. So when you're able to find a shade of gray that is okay for everyone, then you can move on. And that's great. So that it's a small country, but there are a few things to learn from the way they operate, in my opinion. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country. It's amazing. I love going back there, and you're lucky to live there. Let's move on to the changing role of finance professionals in Europe, and it's becoming quite different to maybe other parts in the world. So maybe you could just give us a bit of a backdrop around European sustainability reporting in general and what's been happening in Europe as a trend and when it comes to finance departments.
Yes, very much. And thanks for the opportunity. I think it's a topic close to my heart. I'm a finance person. I've been doing my job for over 20 years. And when you learn finance, you learn that you're basically responsible to manage the cash and to deliver profits. And that's basically your mission statement in a way. Now, there are certain things happening around rules and regulations on the sustainability reporting in Europe, but also elsewhere, that somehow are changing a bit the rules of the game, in my opinion. The sustainability reporting that has been introduced in Europe is called CSRD or ESRS, the Sustainability Reporting Standards. And they have a unique benefit, in my view. They are the same for all the companies, all the industries across Europe. And the introduction of those standards will be gradually starting with the big companies to the smaller. And they will make it possible to have one common framework. That was, I think, in the past, probably one of the blocking points, because there were a lot of different frameworks around and people or companies couldn't really understand which one should I pick. And so that consolidation that we have seen across frameworks is very beneficial. So the CSRD is the one that very much is relevant across Europe. You have also mm-hmm. the IFRS that have developed their own standards, which is another set of standards. But long story short, what those changes imply is that finance and the finance teams will have to report and be responsible for what we called previously non-financial reporting. So you have the world of financial reporting and non-financial reporting that will join forces in a way. And those KPIs or standards will have to be now reported by the finance teams. And that's a big change, I would say, for CFOs in Europe, at least. If you have to report on those new indicators, you need to very much understand what they relate to, what they mean, because you have also to present and defend that internally and externally. So I think it's a new, very interesting times for the CFO function in general. And I know that people will consider that as an additional burden, making the reporting more complex. But I tend to have a different view about some of the benefits of having finance more directly involved on those items like sustainability, environment, or the social aspects of things.
So when you're brought up in a world of credits and debits and everything is very clear cut, suddenly now we should cover what's covered within social, and where do you find the credits and debits for those, because they're not readily available. So what's within scope, and then what are the strategies for measuring within that?
That's a very interesting question, in fact, and it's something I've in fact discovered a bit by coincidence a couple of years back. And the more you dig into that topic, the more you realize that maybe what you've been told for so many years was partially wrong or was probably a bit simplistic. So let me tell you about the debit and credit of things. And there is a notion of environmental debt or social debt. And it's not something new. In fact, it's been around for a couple of years, but now it's getting more and more credit about the fact that, and I can take an example. If you think about the money you get from the bank, if the bank is happy to obviously give you a bit of money to operate.
Not the stuff you rob, you mean? Not if you haven't stolen it from the bank, if they willingly give you the money.
Yeah. So otherwise, yes. And if bankers that are freely giving money away, so tell me, I'm interested. They give you money, but you have a debt on your balance sheet. So somehow you have to pay back. With the social aspects and the environmental aspects, we take for granted that if you take some resources from the environment, could be the forest, could be the soil, could be the water, could be something else, but equally so with employees or workers, you just assume that they work, you take them, and somehow you have maybe the idea that you can replace. If you run out of wood because your forest has been completely used for your production, then you will go for another one and you take another one. But you never pay back, in fact. In that sense, as you will pay back the money from the banker. So the logic here is very much not about circular economy, because that's one step probably too far, but as a minimum is to say, to which extent can you as a business make sure that you will still have access to the very important resources you need from the environment, because they are key for you to operate. So what... can you put in place, and it's really about risk management, what can you put in place in your thinking and your financial management about, yes, I took steps to be sure that my supply and my procurement of key resources is secure and I will not run out of resources that I very much need to operate. So that's the kind of thinking. It's not about saving the world. And no, it's really about thinking long term about running your business and taking into consideration maybe things that were taken for granted. But today, with the global warming, with the some more difficulties to get certain things supplied across the world, there are different constraints that we didn't have in the past. So thinking about maybe a bit more mid-long term about, are we sure that we could operate very much the same way? Do we see any new risks? And how does it translate into a financial strategy to make sure the company can operate with no, without facing issues? So
that view of it is much closer to risk management than, and you mentioned a term I'm going to ask you to explain because I haven't heard before. Did you say the circular economy? That's a different way of looking at it, is it?
Yes. It's definitely, in my view, and because that's part of the finance function, the risk management is very much what we should take into account, even new things that we maybe do not really understand or we're not much familiar with. I usually take the cybersecurity as an example. That's something that I would say 10 years ago was almost inexistent for most companies, except maybe the big ones. Now we know that cyber attacks can basically happen in any kind of company, no matter the size. So we have to take that risk into account and put some measures in place to be sure that the business or the company cannot be impacted. I think on the sustainability side of things, I can see the same kind of turning point. It was maybe not so much of a big deal in the past. Now, I think that in some sectors and in some industries, the risk is becoming quite substantial and has to be taken into account to understand the risk and take the necessary measures. The circular economy is something that is very much a trend that is pushing the logic about we should not take more from the environment than what we can give back. And it's the notion very much of business continuity here. I'll give you an example, which is maybe a good one or easy one to understand. We know for sure that the overall world resources in terms of oil are limited.
Yeah.
There are different questions and different views about how many years of stock do we have still in the ground. So I will not enter that debate, but there is a simple fact that at some point we will and might run out.
Right.
Maybe in 50 years' time, 100 years' time, I don't know. But there is a certainty that at some point when you take away everything you can find in the ground and you cannot replace it because it takes millions of years to create. So it's not something that you can replace. So that's the idea of the circular economy, is to say, instead of using oil or plastic or petrol for operating a business, are there ways to replace those materials with something else that would be more renewable? So something that can grow and can be renewed, so you're not risking running out of the material and the supply. Of course, for transportation, it's a very difficult question. But when it comes to materials that are typically plastics or some other products, there are discussions very much across different companies. It's about risk management exactly the same way. Are there other materials that we can think of that would not run out of supply because they are not taken from the ground and they can regenerate? Could be trees, could be byproducts of the agriculture, could be things you can find in the ocean, seaweed. There are different thinking around that circular economy about. That's a very simple explanation, but more from a supply side of things. That's one of the thinking.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about the expanded role of the finance department, I guess, when it comes to this. What I'm hearing is this is largely about risk management. I guess it's thinking about the things that aren't here today, but could happen. And then in your fractional role, then, does that mean when you come into a place, is it going to be your responsibility then to say, hold on, we need to think about this and this, we need to think about our supply chain, or we need to think about these risks, and then put programs in place? And how does that relate to CSRD? If there's an audit from a CRD or CSRD perspective, how can you, as a finance professional, prove that you have done your responsibility here?
So the reporting side is very much linked to the size of the business. So if you're not very big as a company, you will not have to comply for a couple of years, I would say. So that's very much the trigger in terms of whether or not you should or not do a reporting. But fractional CFO role with SMEs and startups, there are already discussion about risk management. And I had one actually this week about to which extent are we exposed with some key suppliers. And that's just a very good discussion to have, because if that supplier for some reason cannot supply the ingredients or the parts that are relevant for the production of the company, then obviously there is a problem because the production stops. So what could we do to mitigate the risk already? Now, the sustainability reporting goes one a bit further in terms of understanding the carbon emissions, understanding the dependencies on your supply chain, not just from an environmental point of view, but also from a risk point of view, and understanding also if there is no, I would say, social aspects that the company should be aware of. I'm thinking more about child labor or things that you don't always know because you work with suppliers from different countries. That reporting is pushing you to get an understanding of you should be aware,
right,
and you should take measures if you think that there are problems. So it's more a transparency exercise, in fact, on do you really understand your operations end to end from your suppliers to your customers? And are there risks that you should take into account because they could be material, in fact, to your business?
Okay, you just said something that really I had struggled with this concept of why, how does the finance connect with this? But now that you've said it, explained it in that way, when it comes to capital allocators, let's call it banks or investors, and you're looking at investment, if I have two investment opportunities, one with a fractional CFO who's done the risk assessment and has a plan in place versus a business which hasn't got that, there's obviously less risk with the business which has thought about the risks involved in their business. I'm more likely to get my money back, more likely for them to be able to make the repayments. So that allows me to maybe give a better rate, right? So it's all this risk payback rewards. So until you mentioned it, I was still struggling with this to figure out why are finance getting involved with this? But now I see how they're connected, because obviously everything has a risk reward ratio, and businesses that are focusing on this inherently have a lower risk. Inherently, then people are going to be more confident in giving them capital to deploy their business. So maybe we can talk about a couple of the practical ways that this can impact even startups and SME businesses in terms of their ability to raise capital. Are you seeing a benefit? Is it easier to raise capital? Can you raise capital at lower rates? How does it impact in insurance, for example? Is there a dollars and cents payback for all of this social impact?
Yeah, I think you're touching a point which is very valid. It's why would you bother in finance? Because as I said before, your mission is about managing the cash and delivering profits. And that's it. What is changing today is the fact that because more and more transparency and reporting on the social responsibility aspects is done across the finance institutions, there are more and more requests and demands of that kind. So you talked about banks, insurance companies, or investors. Those are typically the kind of people that think long term.
Yeah.
And when they think long term, they want to have a certain degree of certainty or a minimum of risks when they make investment or when they are signing contracts or giving you some money. So those are the ones that are, and insurance companies probably the first, have been the one to really realize that global warming and climate change is not just the fancy stuff. It's actually a real deal. And you just have to look at the news again in Europe and specifically in Spain, unfortunately, what happened the last few days, to just say there are risks that have consequences, unfortunately, on people, but also material consequences that are extremely costly. And that's where insurance companies come into play. They say, we see a growing risks. As a result, we want to have certainty that you as a business and you in finance, you understand what are your risks and how you mitigate your risks. I take again the example of the cybersecurity because it's a bit more mature in people's mind. You have insurances, or you can take an insurance against cyber attacks. To get a contract with an insurance company, you have to prove that you have taken measures and you have put measures in place to mitigate the risks. Otherwise, they will not accept to sign you or as a new customer. On the environmental aspect, depending where you live, where you operate, what is your business model, etc., I think there is an expectation that more and more the same kind of logic will apply. Is to say, if you cannot demonstrate as a finance person that you are seriously taking into account those risks and you evaluated those risks, maybe you will not be able anymore to close an insurance contract. Today, still maybe the case. The question is, what could happen and what are the consequences? Very strangely, in fact, in my experience as a fractional CFO, startups are extremely aware of those realities because investors are asking for that. When they invest in startups, they ask to have an ESG assessment done, and they want to be sure that the startup and the entrepreneurs are aware about their risks, which is very interesting because it's not the case in many SMEs that I'm working with. Maybe in big companies, I think the awareness is maybe higher. But startups, I tend to think that they are more aware because they are requested by investors to take those risks into account from the very beginning in terms of business model. So that's quite an interesting fact, I would say, on the awareness level.
I guess we're all starting to see it perceived, to me anyway, I perceive that weather events are changing, you know? Maybe I'm misappropriating the cause there, but it seems like the weather is becoming more extreme. We all see these events that are happening, big storms in the US more frequently and then Spain, like you mentioned. And since you're in Switzerland, we have to talk about chocolate a little bit. And you have a story about a practical implication of how that has impacted some of your customers. Maybe that will bring it alive as an example of what can happen in a business.
Yes, of course. When we talk about Switzerland, you usually refer to makes you think about chocolate or cheese. So it's either one or the other usually. So we can discuss about chocolate. Yeah. But they are not as tasty usually. Now, interesting fact about chocolate is because of climate change, the production of the cocoa beans has been very challenging. So if you Google just to have a look at the current price on the stock exchange, the cocoa beans, the price per ton has reached $10,000 or exceeded even $10,000 for the very first time this year. Never happened in history. And that's more than a 400% increase within 6 months.
Wow.
So that has a massive impact, of course, in terms of the price of a chocolate tablet. And not just in Switzerland, by the way, because the production of cocoa beans is very limited to a certain number of countries. So that has a direct consequence for a lot of businesses that have to buy those beans and transform them into chocolate. And that's what I was trying to explain before about the risks in your supply chain, just taking that local example. When you have one of your key resources in your business where the price will skyrocket within a couple of months, what are then the consequences for your business? So you will have to increase price. But then the question is, will your customer be willing to pay that additional price? And the other thing we tend to forget is that it also means that the volume of cocoa beans available for the entire world and all the producers is by definition limited. And it means who can actually have access to that stock, limited stock, at which price? And in my experience, the big international companies are probably better placed.
Sure.
To get the lion's share of the stock at the expense of smaller players. And that's where all the relevance, I would say, about the risk management, about the potential supply chain challenges. What does it mean mid-term, long-term, if unfortunately that reality continues in the coming years? So many businesses will probably run out of stock and collapse. And the others that maybe have taken steps to integrate that into their thinking and their strategy might find some alternatives that could be not exactly the same, but could be a replacement or a substitute and keep doing business. So that, I think, illustrates very much the type of very sudden change that businesses can face. I hope to see chocolate on shelf here in Switzerland, and hopefully not to have to pay too much. But realistically, yes, it will become a more expensive kind of product, because the reality is that you cannot grow more cocoa beans than what you currently have in the world.
Yeah, if chocolate is too expensive for the Swiss, we know we're in trouble, because it's a beautiful country, but my God, it's expensive when you come from the outside. So you get what you pay for.
Watches, you talked about watches before, it's a luxury good. Chocolate might become a luxury good as well. Who knows? But yes, it's just a matter of fact.
Yeah. So maybe we can wrap things up with a little discussion around your client at ClearEdge, and for yourself personally, what sort of customers do you really enjoy working with?
As a fractional CFO, I feel blessed with the fact that I can work with different people. I really enjoy that role, the fact that I can meet very inspiring entrepreneurs and in the end help them succeed with my contribution. And that's really great. I think it's a very important relationship. The CEO and the CFO, in my experience, is a couple that has to get along very well so the business can actually thrive and succeed. So I very enjoy those relationships. I like usually entrepreneurs that are passionate about what they do, no matter what, no matter the industry, the sector, but people that are very much passionate because they're on a mission, maybe because they just love what they do. I think it does energize you and the rest of the team, and it's very fun to work with. The challenges are the same in the end. You have to manage cash. You have to protect margins. You have to sometimes take measures that are not always very fun, cutting costs. But when you work with people that really you have fun with and you enjoy working with, it's, as I said, it's a blessing.
Some of us enjoy cutting costs. I'll say not everyone does enjoy it, but some of us
not
do.
All the time, but yes, it's part of the job, yes.
Yeah, very good. All right. So how can people get in touch with you, Christoph?
I'm someone very approachable and available on LinkedIn or on my website. I'm always happy to meet new people and get to know, I would say, new businesses or new possible partners. Yeah, very happy to get in touch if you're interested. Equally so, I'm a big fan of networking with my peers. I think we can always learn from other CFOs and all the fractional CFOs, because the business realities are so different. I probably spend most of my time in the manufacturing world and the world of food and beverage, but there are so much to learn from other sectors and other businesses. Yeah, I'm very, very happy to get in touch.
Okay, I can vouch you've been very approachable, so it's been great to talk to you, and thanks for the segue, because it's a beautiful segue into our call to action. If you're still listening to the podcast, congratulations, your special reward is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/mastermind. So this is a fairly new innovation that we've brought on recently, and what we've been doing is I've been collecting a group of guests from the podcast who are in fractional CFOs or in industry CFOs. We're putting them together into groups with similar levels of experience and cross industry, but several similar challenges that they're focusing on. And what you can do in one of these masterminds is you can bring a business challenge along. It could be how to grow your practice, it could be a client challenge, it could be anything. And then you can get direct feedback from your peers in a trusted environment from people all around the world. So it's a good way to cross-pollinate ideas from people who've maybe a couple of steps ahead of you, or it's a good chance if you have some experience to give back to people who are coming up. So you can go to procurementexpress.com/mastermind to join our fractional CFO mastermind. So thanks for that. Thank you very much, Christoph. It's been fascinating listening to you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, James. Have a good day. Thanks for the invite.